You are Locked On SEC, your daily podcast on the Southeastern Conference. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Locked On SEC. Great to have you guys along on today's show. The latest college football playoff rankings are out. Where did all the SEC teams rank? We'll run through each of those and hear from some of the ESPN analysts. Also, really excited to talk with Senior Bowl Executive Director Jim Nagy. We will get his thoughts on some of the SEC guys committed to play in the Senior Bowl, and there may be some more SEC guys committing very soon. And lastly, we will go around the conference, yet another big name opting out, this one at Arkansas, and also Tennessee losing one of their big playmakers after he got in some trouble. I am Chris Gordy. Be sure to subscribe and follow Locked On SEC for free wherever you get your podcasts. You'll get the latest episode of this podcast as soon as it comes out each and every day, 5 days a week. All right, let's jump into it. The latest college football playoff rankings revealed last night with Reese Davis and company on ESPN. And look, with Auburn losing, they fall out of the top 25. So we had to wait a while before we heard the first SEC school called. In fact, all the way into the top 10, coming in at number 8.
In one spot above Iowa State, it's Georgia. They found a quarterback. Georgia's at number 8.
So Georgia comes in at number 8, and then they like to do a little drama when they get to the top 6 and kind of go in reverse order. So at number 1, of course,
Alabama has now been number 1 in the college football playoff rankings more than every other team combined. Crimson Tide there for the 20th time.
So pretty impressive there. Alabama basically lives in the top 2 or 3 of the college football playoff rankings every single year. But a little suspense with number 5 and 6. The way they revealed it, you knew it was going to be Florida and A&M, but in what order? Remember last week it was A&M ahead of Florida because they beat them head-to-head. But this week, when we saw it play out, Florida, obviously not an impressive first half against Kentucky, but a very impressive second half with their offense and the points they were able to put up. A&M, just a really lackluster performance overall against LSU. Their defense was very good, don't get me wrong, but Kellen Mond was pretty awful. It was bad playing conditions, but you know, they beat LSU 20-7 in not a very impressive fashion. So here is how they revealed number 5 and number 6 with Florida and A&M.
See, here's number 5. It's going to be Florida and Texas A&M, but the order is the question. A&M beat Florida in regular season game head-to-head, so at the moment, A&M still having the edge with that head-to-head. But that, look, Florida can still jump into this. Florida, if it makes it all the way to the SEC championship game, they're going to get a shot at Alabama, and that, one would presume, would trump the head-to-head loss that Florida has against Texas A&M.
Kirk Herbstreit asked to elaborate a little bit on his thoughts on 5 and 6.
Well, I look at this, and I think you make a great point for people in the SEC that are either excited or concerned about Florida and A&M. That will take care of itself. So that's almost a moot point.
Yeah, it's what everybody keeps saying. It's going to work itself out, right? Because at least Florida, their path to get in is basically they have to win the SEC championship. They have to beat Alabama. It's just things will get very sticky if, let's say, Notre Dame hands Clemson their second loss in the ACC title game, and Clemson's out of the picture. Who gets that last spot? You know, is it Alabama losing their first game of the season, the SEC title game? Are they still more deserved to get in over a one-loss Texas A&M, which obviously Alabama would have the head-to-head win over A&M? I think it all depends on the fashion that it plays out. Let's say, all right, fantasy world, let's just say Florida beats up Alabama really impressively in the SEC title game. Let's say wins 45-21. You know, is that enough to say, all right, well, A&M should get in ahead of Alabama? I don't think so, and I don't think Alabama would have to absolutely lay an egg for them to lose badly to Florida in the SEC title game. But just saying, those are some scenarios that could play out. Here was David Pollack talking about Florida controlling their own destiny here.
I still look at this and I say, there's only one team outside of the top 4 that controls its own destiny, and it's not the 5th team in the country. It's Florida. I mean, Florida has an opportunity to play Alabama in the SEC championship game and make their way into the college football playoffs. So, I mean, if you're a Florida fan, you got to be excited. Don't worry about the A&M head-to-head and where you're at right now, because you've got a big opportunity ahead of you to get in the college football playoffs. So that's a pretty awesome spot for Florida to be in.
Yeah, if you're with David Pollack's making a point there, obviously Florida can control their own destiny. It's a tough ask, though, right? Hey, just go beat Alabama on a neutral field, and you'll be in the playoff. But that's what needs to happen for Florida to do that. Now, if Alabama beats Florida in the SEC title game, clearly Alabama will stay number one. They'll remain undefeated, and they'll go on to the playoff as the number one seed. What will be the other SEC team at that point? Then you're talking about Florida with two losses. A&M is the best opportunity to get a second SEC team in at that point. But at that point, you're talking about a non-conference champion A&M, one loss coming out of the SEC. And again, that one loss to Alabama, who would be the number one team in this scenario, do they get in ahead of some of these other ones that, you know, maybe on the outside looking in, like the Cincinnati's and the BYU's? Again, if Clemson loses to Notre Dame, again, that's their second loss, so they're out of it. And then Ohio State, what happens with them? They've only played four games, and the playoff committee had to keep kind of arguing why should Ohio State be ahead of some of these teams that are, you know, 8-0 or 8-1 or 9-1 or whatever, like teams that have played a lot more games than Ohio State, who's only played four, yet the committee keeps arguing that Ohio State's very impressive. Here was Joey Galloway discussing a possibility of the SEC getting two teams in.
Florida continues to win. They get to the SEC championship game, and it's a very close game against Alabama, a team that we all believe is the number one clear-cut team in the country. Let's say they go play them down to the last second. I just think it opens up a lot of doors and a lot of conversations for this committee to say, look, the way these teams are playing right now, we only have a small sample of Ohio State, but the way these other teams are playing, we do believe that they are just flat out better. I just think it opens a lot of doors for discussion if Ohio State doesn't get to play more games.
Yeah, the argument everyone's making is, you know, the Big Ten said you got to play at least six games to play for your conference title game. Well, Ohio State only has two games remaining. They have no room for error. If either game, the game against Michigan State this week or the game against Michigan next week, gets postponed or canceled, rather, they're not going to make that up, and so Ohio State would not be able to play for the Big Ten title game. Thus, you know, do you keep Ohio State in the top four in the playoff if they're not playing in the Big Ten championship? There's just a lot on the line here, and it all becomes these arguments on eyeballs, you know, the eye test versus resume and what you've actually done. I know a lot of people say Ohio State should be a top four team. They at least look that way with Justin Fields and how they've played, but at the end of the day, you also have to put together a resume that earns your spot into that top four. Gary Barta, who's the head of the selection committee, talking with Reese Davis, and he was touching on the idea of how close was A&M to moving up to fourth. We know, like we said, they struggled, or didn't struggle, but just weren't impressive against LSU offensively. Defensively, they were. They stomped LSU, shut them out until the final minute of the game where they finally punched in a touchdown. But the question is, Ohio State hadn't played a game in 2 weeks. You know, how close was it to A&M jumping into that fourth spot ahead of Ohio State?
It's talked about a lot, and it's specifically talked about in the room about whether or not Ohio State goes to four, or if Texas A&M flips and goes to four, and Ohio State goes to five. A lot of discussion about that. At the end of the day, the offensive firepower of Ohio State, all the weapons they have, the win over Indiana. And then we did have an additional game to evaluate in Texas A&M. They beat LSU 20-7. But at the end of the day, the committee just decided that Ohio State was still a better team than Texas A&M, deserved to be four, but definitely a lot of discussion about number of games played.
That again, Gary Barta. So a lot to be figured out here, but Ohio State is certainly one that we need to keep an eye on just in terms of, you know, if it comes down to a 9-1 Texas A&M team versus a 5-0 Ohio State team, if they don't play a sixth game and don't play for the Big Ten title game, it's just going to be a mess for that playoff committee. All right, when we return, we will be talking with Jim Nagy, the head of the Senior Bowl Executive Director. We'll find out from him who from the SEC will be playing in the Senior Bowl next month. It's the end of January, so we're into December. That'll be next month. We'll talk with Jim Nagy next. Getting ready for the weekend, getting ready for another weekend of sitting on the couch watching college football, enjoying some ice-cold Coors Light. But you don't have to wait for the weekend. We got football later this afternoon. We get Ravens-Steelers, a little NFL action. Perfect reason for you to rush home and pop open an ice-cold Coors Light. These days, everything is go, 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 nonstop hustle all the time. There is only one beer out there that is literally made for you to chill, and that is Coors Light. We tell you all the time, mountain cold refreshment. It is cold lagered, cold filtered, cold packaged. It is as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. When you see those blue mountains on the side, you know it is ice cold. Perfect for a moment to unwind. Coors Light is the one that I choose when I need to unwind. So when you guys want to hit that reset button, whether it's tonight, whether it's this weekend, wherever, reach for the beer that is made to chill, and that is Coors Light. And we tell you, you can get them in their new-look cans delivered straight to your door at get.coorslight.com. And please remember to celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Really excited because I got in a new box of Built Bars in the mail yesterday, and very excited to snack down on them. They are the best-tasting protein bar ever. And a great healthy alternative instead of all the junk food that you guys have been snacking on. I told you last week, Thanksgiving, you ate way too many calories. I know it. You know it. We all know it. Start back on the right track, making some healthier decisions when eating, and go to the Built Bars. They are healthy. They are great for health-conscious people if you're looking to lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. I got tons of different flavors. I tell you all the time, cookies and cream, my favorite. 17 grams of protein, only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 4 grams net carbs. Head to their website right now at builtbar.com. You can check out all the different selections that they have. You can even do a variety pack if you don't know what flavor you want, and you can check them out, but make sure you do. You put in the promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON. You're going to get 20% off your next order. Use the promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Hey, a quick reminder to tune into Friday's show where we'll do a full preview of every game in the SEC with our matchup breakdowns and score predictions. Some teams are wrapping up their seasons this weekend. Yeah, Kentucky, South Carolina, they're calling it a season already, so you do not want to miss it. That'll be on Friday on Locked On SEC. Roll along here, Locked On SEC, and real excited to talk with this guy because as the college football season winds down, that means we're getting so close to the Senior Bowl, the Reese's Senior Bowl, as the premier showcase for seniors coming out of college, preparing for the next level, and they've had a ton of guys showcased that have made it to the next level and are doing big things in the NFL. And Jim Nagy, who is the senior director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, joins us now. Jim, what's going on, man?
Oh, it's almost draft season. Everything's good.
Talk about what has this year been like for you? Because, look, we've all had our own experiences, and it has been crazy. But I'd say first and foremost, kudos to you guys for standing strong. I mean, I've seen a lot of, like, the high school showcases have canceled and all this. What has this year been like for you and continuing on to prepare for the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, just like everyone, it's certainly been a different year. It's had its challenges, but you have to be ready to adapt. You know, so that's been the biggest thing, is just knowing what we have in front of us and making just being really fluid with it. So you know, the biggest change for us, just like it is with the NFL teams, is not being allowed on campus and not we're allowed into games, but being from the stands. So that's a challenge for us. You know, we. At the Senior Bowl, we like to take some pregame videos of the players moving around and post those on our social to really connect with the players. It's really a nice recruiting tool for us, and we haven't been able to do that. And then when you're down on the field, it's connecting with coaches and scouts from around the league and just, you know, getting information that helps us make our decisions here at our game. So, I mean, I'll say one thing it has done on the positive side. We have had to cancel a lot of what we do, through the spring, the summer, and the fall months because of COVID, in our community here in Mobile, whether it's, youth flag football or 7-on-7 league for high school kids. We've had to eliminate a lot of that stuff, but all that's done is allow us to watch a heck of a lot more tape.
So we have a large SEC audience, obviously, here in the South. So a lot of people are within driving distance of Mobile. I guess first and foremost, now that we're into December, we're literally talking next month is the Senior Bowl. What's the plan? Are you going to allow fans in? Is it going to be capped? What's the situation there?
Yeah, we're going to have to. We are going to let fans in. We're already at capacity in terms of sales. We're have to just go by the state guidelines, and really, it's what South Alabama, the University of South Alabama, has had to do all fall at their games. So roughly somewhere between 6,000 and 7,000 people will be allowed in the stadium, about 25% capacity. So yeah, unfortunately, we're moving out to this beautiful, brand new, state of the art. Stadium, and it doesn't look like we're going to be able to fill it this year, but no, there will be fans in the stands, but we've already reached that.
You guys have had some huge names come through there. This year is no different. Obviously, we have an SEC audience. Touch on some of the guys that are coming from the SEC. Obviously, the quarterbacks, you start with the premier of premier with a name like Kyle Trask and Kellen Mond.
Yeah, Kyle's the guy. He's been our top-rated quarterback going back to last spring, so off his junior tape and now carrying it through this year. He's having another great season. And, you know, what really sticks out about Kyle, unlike some of the other quarterbacks where, you know, they got a huge arm or they can really run it, Kellen Mond being one of those guys, Kyle's just so wise beyond his years playing the quarterback position. And, you know, he wasn't a starter in high school. I think that story's been told pretty well. Sat behind De'Eriq King, who's had a great college career. Now he's at Miami, started off at Houston. But my first exposure to Kyle last year was at the Florida LSU game in Baton Rouge, a night game, which is about as hostile of an environment as you can find in college football. And just to see how Kyle handled that night was super impressive, because I wasn't even really watching him. We were watching Van Jefferson and Tyree Cleveland and Jabari Zuniga and all the guys we ended up with from Florida in the game last year. And then on the LSU side, I think we had five or six from their team. So, but to see what Kyle did, he really got my attention that night just with how he handled that environment. And then, yeah, you talked about Kellen Mond, and I think the big thing with Kellen is he's really, really become more consistent this year and really playing his best football these last 5 or 6 weeks. I had a chance to talk to Kellen a little bit after he accepted his invite, and he feels the same way. He feels like he's really taken that next step, and that took a while for him. You know, he's played a ton of football at A&M. Usually that jump happens between first year and second year as a starter. It took a little bit more time with Kellen, but man, he's playing really good this year. That's why they've got A&M where they are. And A&M had a lot of opt-out players this year. They lost a lot of talent just in the opt-out guys. So what they're getting done there in College Station has been impressive.
I think the thing that's most intriguing, Jim, when I look at the names like Kerry Vincent Jr. from LSU and Jamie Newman, who, you know, Wake Forest transferred to Georgia, didn't play. You know, those guys that sat out this entire year, I think, you know, those are guys come Senior Bowl week, all the scouts are going to have eyes on because they want to see, hey, what have these guys been doing, you know, this whole year and working out and keeping in shape and getting ready for the next level?
Yeah, no, there's definitely some mystery behind those guys. You know, they haven't played this year, and they did opt out. They're both talented players. I mean, Kerry's going to be one of the fastest DBs in this draft. And, you know, Jamie did a lot of really good things at Wake Forest, and it's amazing how many wins Coach Clawson is piled up there. That is not an easy place to win football games, and that staff has done an awesome job. But there is, you know, that projection from the Wake offense to the NFL, it's really apples to oranges. So to get Jamie down here in a week where he's going to be coached by an NFL staff and, you know, be running in more of a pro-style offense, it's going to be big for Jamie, and he knows that.
I know Coach O yesterday at LSU said this Alabama offensive line coming in, it may be the best offensive line that's ever come into Baton Rouge. I saw Landon Dickerson accepted an invite. What goes into the process of choosing a guy and sending him an invite? How's that process work?
Well, it's just, you know, we watch a ton of tape. We have access to all the tape that the 32 teams do, so we can pull that college tape whenever we need to, and we've got a huge database full of games. And again, that process really started last March. You know, even I was still working on last year's draft, you know, through February, March, and April with some ESPN stuff that I do. But the guys in the office and our scouts on the road, they were diving deep into that stuff all the way back to March. So, you know, we just based it off the tape mostly, you know, in live game looks, and we didn't get those this fall, at least not to the magnitude that we have in the past. You know, we have been out to games this fall, certainly, especially here in the Southeast. You know, our three scouts that work in the building and myself have been out to games, but there's, you know, there's not that, not to the same level. We don't have guys all over the country going to games, and, you know, some of the schools out west have only played a game or two. So, you know, that's, and then it's just my relationships that work in 20 years in the NFL. We're not naive to think that, you know, we've got all the answers. So we are in constant contact with the NFL teams, and we kind of have a formal call process that we wrapped up last week where we touch base for an hour, hour and a half with about 23, 24 teams, I think it was, and just comparing our boards with theirs and our grades and making sure we're on the right players that they want to see, because this game is for those guys. You know, this game is for the 32 teams to figure out players. So, you know, that's a critical part of our process as well, is just, you know, relying on our relationships around the NFL.
Do you ever feel like I don't know, it might be weird to say this, but like a proud dad when you see these guys that come to your Senior Bowl week, and maybe some guys have a lot of hype, but some guys maybe don't, and then you go on to see what they're doing on Sundays and becoming big-time NFL players. Like, is that just kind of a proud moment to go, man, I knew that guy when, you know, four scouts were looking at him, and now he's a star in the NFL?
Yeah, it's Sundays are different for me now than working for a team. You know, when you work for a team, you're really invested in just that one team, and you know, you kind of ride it out every week with your team. You know, you're trying to build a Super Bowl winning team, and so that's the allure of working in the NFL, is being part of something bigger than you. At least that's what it was for me. I always just liked being involved with the team aspect. But yeah, so in this role, it is different, and it is fun. It's a lot of fun to sit back. I mean, we might have both rookies of the year come out of our game from this year. Justin Herbert, I think, is the presumptive favorite to win the Offensive Rookie of the Year award. He's smashing about every passing record that's out there. And then Jeremy Chinn, the safety from the Carolina Panthers, who had two fumble recoveries for touchdowns this year, which hadn't happened in about 70 years in the NFL. Jeremy could easily win the Defensive Rookie of the Year award. So it is fun. It's a lot of fun, especially for a guy like Jeremy, who's from, you know, Southern Illinois, an FCS-level school, or Kyle Duggar, from the North Rhine, which is a Division II school last year, who's doing great things in New England. And even going beyond that, Ben Bartsch was a Division III player from St. John's up in Minnesota, and he's starting right now as a rookie with the Jacksonville Jaguars, which, you know, if anyone's seen Division III football, that is a huge, huge jump to see what guys like Ben are doing. It's a lot of fun.
It's so funny when I'm looking down the roster of the guys that are already coming. And, I mean, like, all these guys just had monster games this week. Ben Cleveland was just named Offensive Lineman of the Week in the SEC at Georgia. You got Larry Roundtree, who was just a monster this past week against Vanderbilt. Trey McKitty from Georgia just caught his first touchdown of the season. So, man, it's a star-studded lineup, especially with guys from the SEC. But I don't know if you have two better Blazers than Shai Smith from South Carolina and Kadarius Toney from Florida. Man, that's going to be fun to watch those guys.
Yeah, you know, last year's receiving group, the last 2 years actually, a couple years ago we had Deebo Samuel from South Carolina and a bunch of other guys that are making a lot of plays. But this past year's group, you got Chase Claypool from Notre Dame, who already has 10 touchdowns in 10 games. You know, Michael Pittman Jr. in Indianapolis. And, I mean, Brandon Ayuk in San Francisco is doing great things. Van Jefferson's doing awesome with the Rams. So, yeah, last year's group was great. And just with those names you mentioned, you know, we're hoping to get Devontae Smith down here. I think we already have commits from 16 wideouts. And there's some really dynamic players in that group. I mean, like, a guy that most people probably haven't heard of is a guy named Dwayne Eskridge from Western Michigan. I think he's averaging like 25 yards a catch this year. It seems like he scores a touchdown every time he touches the ball. And, you know, people are going to know his name, you know, as we work through this draft cycle, because Dwayne is up with those guys you mentioned. He's just not playing in that league. But you put on Dwayne's tape, I mean, he looks like he is playing at a completely different speed than everyone else on the field in the MAC.
Last thing for you, Jim. It's become that trend the last decade, 15 years in college football world, where, you know, you have guys who leave after their junior year, and so obviously those are guys you don't get to see in the Senior Bowl. You would think, you know, from that standpoint, you'd miss out on a lot of talent, but I don't know what it is. Does it just seem like you still have those quality guys who stick around for their senior years? And obviously, I mean, you have no lack of star power in the Senior Bowl every single season.
No, there's enough guys to stick around. Like you've said, the last 2 years, it's ironic, we've hit the same number both years. In my 2 years of the game, we've had 40 guys go in the first three rounds each of the last 2 years. So there's plenty of good players. And the nice thing is the NFL kind of relaxed the rule probably 6 or 7 years ago, where we can bring juniors to the game if they graduate, right? Because they're there to get their diploma, and if they do that, why would you prevent a kid from taking advantage of a showcase like the Senior Bowl? So we are open to some juniors, even for this year's game. Like, we can't announce those guys until they finish up in December, and we have to make sure they get that diploma and take care of their classroom stuff But there's some really big name juniors that are going to be open to us this year. So we'll hopefully be adding some of those names here in the next couple weeks.
Well, Jim, I know you're super busy this time of year, and we thank you so much for joining us 60 days away from the Senior Bowl. It's going to be here before we know it. So thanks for the time, man, and we love watching. We'll definitely be watching again this year.
I appreciate you having me back on.
Thanks so much. Jim Nagy there from the Senior Bowl in Mobile, Alabama, does a fantastic job with everything, putting that thing together. And I just can't imagine having to deal with all the COVID protocols and everything that's going on this year, and you know, still having to kind of travel around and not being able to go see the guys at practice, but you know, at least get to a game and watch a guy in person and then extend that invite. But it has become the premier of the premier. I already mentioned some of the names, but just let me run through some of the other SEC guys. You got Malik Herring, defensive lineman from Georgia. Kerry Vincent, the DB from LSU, who opted out this season, but obviously is a big-time player. Jeremiah Moon from Florida, defensive end. Jabril Cox, linebacker from LSU. KJ Britt over at Auburn. Hopefully he gets back on the field this week. Royce Newman, guard from Ole Miss. And then Landon Dickerson, I mentioned, from Alabama, big time, along with Deontay Brown, two offensive linemen from Bama. Kellen Mond, the quarterback. Kyle Trask, the quarterback from Florida. I mean, it has just been a star-studded event from the SEC, and no shortage of talent again this year. And as you heard there from Jim, they're going to have even more guys from the SEC probably committing here in the next couple of weeks. So really enjoyed that conversation. Hope you did as well. We got more to come here on Locked on SEC. Tomorrow is Crossover Thursday all across the Locked On NFL network of podcasts. Whichever is your favorite NFL team, we have a podcast for it right here on Locked On. Crossover Thursday is a great way to get a quick breakdown of every game for your fantasy team or your parlay. Crossover Thursday is only on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm assuming we got a lot of maybe Saints, Bucks, Falcons fans in our listening audience. And let's be real, if you're a fan of SEC guys, you go follow them wherever. There was a big contingent of Bengals fans popping up in Baton Rouge this year with Joe Burrow getting drafted there number one overall. All right, let's jump into it. There is a lot to run through in the headlines in the SEC. Let's go around the conference.
Boots out to the right. Intercepted.
Makes the handoff.
Throws. Throw to the ball. What a catch.
Around the conference.
Arkansas running back Rakeem Boyd, his time in Fayetteville has come to an end. The senior running back just announced his decision to call it a career on social media yesterday. He will opt out for the remainder of the season. His focus now shifts towards the NFL. Boyd rushed for over 1,100 yards last year, but only had 309 yards and three touchdowns this season. That means the Razorbacks will be without him when they play Mizzou this Saturday. Boyd has struggled through injuries throughout much of his time in Fayetteville, including this season, with him dealing with those issues. Treylon Smith has emerged as the team's go-to back in the Kendall Briles offensive system. So we wish Rakeem Boyd the best of luck at the next level. Over at Alabama, Fidarian Mathis, speaking with the media yesterday, says it's not that different practicing without Coach Saban on the field. He said, quote, "He's on the TV. You can hear his voice when we mess up or whenever we do something well." It was later clarified that those conversations happen after practice. It's not like a Big Brother type situation where somebody's walking around with Saban's face on a computer yelling at everybody in practice. But he is watching everything. Bad news over at Tennessee, as their linebacker, Kevon Bennett, has been dismissed from the team following an arrest on weapons and drug charges during a traffic stop yesterday morning in Knoxville. Police found over 44 grams of marijuana, 58 plastic bags, and a handgun in his vehicle, according to the report. Bennett currently has 22 tackles on the season, leads the team in tackles for loss, and has 4.5 sacks, which is a team lead as well. The Vols play host to Florida this weekend. Might venture to say Kyle Trask may have a clean jersey at the end of this one, with the Vols losing Kevon Bennett, dismissed from the team. Over at Auburn, after spending his first two seasons as a wide receiver, Matthew Hill moved over to cornerback this year. Now, maybe leaving for a different program. According to Rivals.com, Hill
has entered the transfer portal, and that means the Auburn Tigers could soon be losing depth in their secondary. Be heading to a different school. Matthew Hill has appeared in 3 games for Auburn this year, but he hasn't recorded any stats over his first 2 seasons. He had 4 carries for 30 yards, 8 receptions for 46 yards. During the preseason, he switched to the defensive side of the ball, and although he hasn't made a big impact in the secondary, Auburn won't have quite as much depth if he does decide to leave. Hill was a 4-star recruit in the Tigers' 2018 recruiting class, according to 24/7 Sports, and now that's a lot of their top recruits from the 2018 class leaving Gus Malzahn and Auburn. Over in South Carolina, Kevin Harris, running back, is only 72 yards from ending a drought that South Carolina has suffered since 2013. The Gamecocks running back needs that many yards to hit the 1,000-yard mark on the season. It's the first time a running back at South Carolina would do it in the past 7 years. Mike Bobo, interim head coach, said, "I think it's a goal that's on our kids' minds. It's not just Kevin. It's something that the offense takes pride in, especially the offensive line and running backs." Harris, currently at 928 yards, leads the SEC and 14 touchdowns. He's been very good this year. Over at Vanderbilt, their interim coach, Todd Fitch, said he, quote, talked to a couple of guys about players possibly opting out. Of course, Derek Mason fired on Sunday. The team's sitting here at 0-8. Fitch said there will be updates on roster numbers later this week, but if you believe Bruno Reagan over at VandySports.com, he said, "I'm not sure that Vandy will even have enough players to finish the season." He said, "I'm hearing 6 or 7 more players have left the program. Some of them are team captain level names. We will see who is on the field for Vandy, and again, if they'll have the numbers to finish the season with enough guys on the roster." That's not exactly inviting to whoever the next head coach will be. "Hey, come this team. We may not be able to have enough players to fill the roster." Also over to Auburn, during his Tuesday morning press conference, Gus Malzahn gave the latest injury updates on the Plains. Auburn's offense has not looked the same since Tank Bigsby went down with an injury a couple weeks ago. He played against Alabama last week, didn't really look like himself. Gus Malzahn said he hopes Bigsby will bounce back this week. In addition to Tank Bigsby being banged up, Malzahn noted that offensive lineman Bro'Darius Ham and defensive back Jalen Simpson are all limited heading into the Texas A&M game. And adding to the injury woes, Alec Jackson recently had surgery. He will not play this weekend, so a bunch of issues there. Malzahn also noted that running back DJ Williams is working his way back from an ankle injury. Hope to see him back out there soon, and that is around the conference. My goodness, just not much good news, is there? At this point in the season, you just start getting players opting out, players getting arrested and kicked off the team. Goodness gracious. That is going to do it for this edition of Locked On SEC. My thanks very much to Jim Nagy of the Senior Bowl. Really appreciate him for coming on, and really excited to see all the SEC guys who will be taking part in that next month. I mean, we're talking the regular season winding down here. Will it be in the bowl season? How many teams will accept bowl bids? And then it'll be guys heading to the next level, getting ready for the Senior Bowl and combine and draft and everything else. It's flown by, hasn't it? I'm Chris Gordy. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a great day.